This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Everybody, happy Friday. Already one third of the way through June. Jeez. Anyway, if anyone's wondering why I haven't responded to your emails, I'm running a little behind. I'll catch up hopefully sometime today. Anyway, my mother's health took another dive yesterday. I don't know what the hell's going to happen now. The doctors aren't even sure, but, I mentioned how I wasn't sure what was going to happen, something happened to her that I might have to postpone the show for a while, but looks like that's all straightened out. Although I might take a small hiatus, a few days or something, I don't know. But, I won't be stopping the broadcasts for, a length of time. I was talking maybe, a couple, 2 or 3 months, but no, that's not going to. Anyway, I could get a call later and find out, oh, wow, she's doing fine again. Or I could find out something not so pleasant. She's kind of in a comatose state right now. It's not a coma. She is giving some response, but not verbal. She doesn't even open her eyes. Ah, Christ. Yeah. This sucks. The only thing is that, I was prepared for this. I saw it coming. That's the only thing that makes this a little more bearable. This is never a pleasant thing. It always sucks ass, but what isn't tolerable, what isn't acceptable, what is absolutely disgusting is when you see people dying at a premature age, a young age. That's what's absolutely repulsive. I can't even go into a children's hospital. Oh my God, man. Kids with cancer, on death's door when their lives haven't even started yet. That is what's just absolutely. You Bible dupes out there, how wonderful your God is. Go visit a children's hospital sometime. Yeah. Go to the intensive care unit and look how many kids are right on death's door. And then preach to me about how wonderful your God is. Knock it off. Just knock it off. That's another reason why Bible dupes live in a little shell. They shelter themselves from the outside world so they don't have to be reminded of how inconsistent their belief system is. isolate yourself from the ugly realities of the world so you can continue to live in your little blissful state of complete and total ignorance. You know, that's one of the reasons why I was so easily able to accept the bullshit of Yowie Land. I hadn't experienced life enough yet. I hadn't been out there. I hadn't seen enough people die around me, suffer around me, especially fellow believers. Oh, over the years, collectively, things started accumulating. But, you know, not all at once. I didn't really get the panoramic view. Oh, I knew there was suffering in the world, but I hadn't experienced it personally enough. It's not enough to know it's out there and to occasionally see a few bad things go wrong that you can easily write off because they don't adversely affect you enough personally. You have to be screwed and see enough people getting screwed around you majorly. People that shouldn't be getting screwed. People that were decent. But as long as you surround yourself with fellow dupe believers who keep reminding you of the same bullshit you've already swallowed, keep reinforcing it, and aren't exposed enough to the ugly realities of this bitch of a world, yeah, oh, it makes it so much easier to buy it. Oh, yes, this world's being run by an all-loving and all-powerful God. It's just not reality. It's just not reality. It's the equivalent of clicking your heels and saying, there's no place like home, Toto. Jesus Christ, man. You know, that's really what it is. Religion is for people that can't handle reality. And so they enter a frickin' fantasy world. Oh, it does other things for them. There's other reasons why people embrace it, but that's one of the biggest ones right there. That's it. They never put on the big boy pants. They just can't handle reality. So they play make-believe. They sweep it under the rug. Hear no evil, see no evil. Hey, I'm not saying it's pleasant to have to face the ugly realities of this world. It freaking sucks ass. But, you know, it is reality. We do live in a shithole of a world. This world is a delicious tasting burger sandwiched in between two thick pieces of shit. That's how this life is. And so to get by, you got to focus on the taste of the burger. You have no choice but to eat the shit along with it. But you got to try as much as you can. Face the reality of the shit. Don't deny that you just took some shit into your mouth. In fact, mostly shit. Very little burger. You can't deny that reality. It's forced down your throat. But to get through and keep your sanity, you got to focus on the burger and the taste of that. I mean, you know, it's not pleasant to have to come to terms with that, but that is the reality. But, you know, Bible dupes ignore the shit so much and focus so much on the burger that they deny that they're eating shit as they feed you shit. Jesus Christ. All right, I'm taking my analogy too far there, but you understand my point. They're in denial. That's really what it is. Religion is living in denial. Oh, they deny a whole lot of things, don't they? They also deny that their fellow believers are scum. The great majority of them are. They're absolute scum, especially their leaders. Why? They're not only not scum, they're great people led by God. Catholics are especially good at that, playing that game. Why? Their leaders are infallible! Anyway, looks like we got a caller here. Welcome to the show, caller.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey! This is Vin. Vin.
This is Vinny from New Jersey.
Father Vin.
I'm funny. Yeah. Skeptic, heretic Vin.
Yeah. Be proud of that label.
I'm really sorry to hear about your mom's demise. These years are you know, some of the hardest for all of us.
You know what sucks is you want her, you know, I want her to come out of this, and I don't know how it can happen at this point. It can, but at the same time, though, you know, she's suffered so much. She's been in so much pain. The doctor said they did an x-ray, and she's got multiple fractures all up and down her spine. Some of them, quite a few of them, happened over the years and have healed. But, you know, no wonder she's been complaining of aches and pains. She, you know, her bones are so brittle. They've been cracking and breaking left and right. So, you know, if she comes out of this semi-comatose state, is it even worth it? I mean, you know, is that living? How much of a life can she have being down to 60, I don't know, 4 pounds or whatever the hell?
You know, a lot of what happens to people when they're that age is that it's a combination of the fluoride in our water.
Oh, yeah,
and,
sure.
The fact that coffee, one of the side effects of coffee, and it really does it to women even worse than men, is it leaches calcium out of their body, and they don't replace it.
And there they are. You know,
the bones brittle. Most people, when they get broken bones, because this just happened to my girlfriend's mom a couple of years ago, is they don't fall. Their bone literally breaks as
they're
walking.
They can cough and break a rib. My mother did that once.
Yes, that's and this, a lot of this is preventable, but we don't have a medical system that really helps us.
No.
Because there's no money in it.
In the hospitals, they give you coffee. In the nursing home, they give you coffee. Yeah, look at the food that they give. Meals on Wheels. I don't know if that's around the country or just in my area. Do you have that down your way?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So that's probably nationwide. Do you ever look at the slop? My mother didn't even eat most of the stuff. You know, they would give her an apple or a banana. She would have that. But the rest of it, throw it in the trash. It is loaded with sodium, high sugar. Oh, Christ, it's poison.
Yeah, it's really horrible. By the way, Charlie, you know, I think by now you realize when you do these shows, this is just as helpful for you as it is for us.
Oh, it is. It is.
Because you're really getting to talk to people or communicate with people that at least have a curious mind and see a lot of the same problems that you see.
Yeah.
And so it does help you, because if you can't vent, if you can't let it out, if you don't have somebody to at least listen to you, then you know, you'd probably go crazy.
Yeah.
And so that
itself
is so good.
You know, this information.
You know, you were talking about people eating crap. You know, there's a lot of people don't realize that our food industry is basically, a lot of it's been sent, especially on the West Coast, has been sent down to Mexico. And what they do is they beat cows. And the byproduct of a lot of what they do is the cows, you know, let loose of their bowels. And a lot of that taints the meat that a lot of fast food places use.
In addition to the toxins they pump it with, you know, with the chemicals.
Yeah, but what happens is what they figure is that's the cheapest way to go. You know, they're not really concerned about whether it's healthy or not. So they realized if they cook the fecal matter that's in the chopped meat to a certain temperature, then there's no bacterial content. But when you put children in charge, in these fast food restaurants, the burgers aren't always cooked as long as they should be, and then people eat them. And believe it or not, about 250 people wind up in a hospital just because they eat from fast food restaurants, and 9 of them die. Every single day this happens.
Yeah.
So, you know, we live in a system that's really not created for us at all. It's really not.
Nope.
It's created for profit, and that's this is what we get.
That's a little bit sick. Everything's
and it's hard.
Everything.
It's really horrible. By the way, something else I wanted to share with you, because I've been listening to you, you know, steady, because I need to get some sort of sanity in my life. It's very important, and I think you realize this now because you read the Bible, and that every time, anything you read, and it doesn't matter what it is or whatever verbal claims that anybody makes, are have to be considered hearsay. Unless we scientifically prove it true, and by the way, that includes science.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not making any claims, but a lot of people write books that attract a certain audience, and they do it because they can make money out of it.
Yeah. You regardless know, whether it's true show. Or not. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. If you have, especially people who are religious and are kept in a state of a childlike mind. Those people are drawn to the supernatural. So you see ghost shows that appear on programming, and you know there's no evidence of any of this stuff. But,
a lot of hyping up just to boost ratings.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. So, but my point is, it's very important that anything you read, you view it as a skeptic. And like I said, this includes science, because the problem with even science and some of the people who write books about it on different subjects is they're in it for money.
Yeah.
So if there is something to what you may look at as a skeptic, you have to say to yourself, is this guy telling me the truth? Is it because they've already have a book out there? You know, there was a guy that was in, speaking of 9/11, he made a bunch of books concerning the flight paths and, you know, the people that were supposedly on the terrorists on the planes. And when I was on Wing TV, we tried to bring up to this guy that what about the physical evidence? And he didn't want to hear nothing about it because he had written books about it.
Yeah. It
didn't conform to his frequency. And so what happens if we're right about what we're saying, his books are worthless.
Yeah.
And so you see this in academia where people have written books about history. And even though we realize now that just about everything they told us is not correct, these people don't want to lose their money. That's what it comes down to. So they'll stand by their what they say is history and cling on to it forever.
Religion is most famous for that. Square peg must fit in the round hole.
You know, a lot of people say, you know, I don't dismiss anybody for what they say. Just because I may not agree with certain aspects of
right.
their life.
Sure.
But I remember hearing Penn Jillette say that if you want to be an atheist, just read the Bible. You know, and really when you think about it, like you said, how many times you read this book and you never really thought about what was missing or what they were actually saying?
Yeah.
You know, and that's because you were taught not to. This is the word. So, you know,
you're convinced there's no
book.
Inconsistency, so you're not going to see them, even though they jump up and bite you in the ass.
Yeah, and now you see it, and now the first thing develops, because the same thing happened to me, is I start going, well, what else did they lie to me about?
Yeah.
You know, and everybody comes to that point at a different level. You know, I listen, and without going into detail, I was listening to the guy that's a famous atheist, Sam Harris. He was being interviewed by somebody else. But he was talking, and all of a sudden he said, we don't have enough money for research into alternative methods of antibiotics. And this is what happens when you live in a world that's completely abstract and not real. Because as intelligent as this man is, he's actually saying something that's completely artificial. I mean, when do we run out of anything that's not real? It's not possible. But when you live in this society where it is an artificial world created by the rulers of the world, you don't realize that everything they've taught, that includes just the very language, where you have to realize this man is so smart, but he lives in this fairy tale. So that's the danger of religion or blind faith into anything.
Yeah.
So we're being restricted. You know, recently I heard somebody say, and this is the sad thing about getting older, is you forget where you heard it. But I remember somebody actually mentioning in one of the podcasts that I listened to, where it's coming out that 6 million people actually starved to death during the Great Depression. Now, history in other countries recorded a lot higher, as much as 10 million. But our school system has never mentioned this. So my question is, the same system is still in place. How many people are dying now? Just because they don't have a job, and it's not their fault they don't have a job. It's because the entire system that we live under is falling apart.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so and nobody's talking about it, even alternative media.
Even though it's going on all around us. Yeah, there's an ignorance about it or a denial about it. So, yeah.
You know, I took a friend of mine who, you know.
Not only is the media not reporting it, most people don't want to hear it anyway.
Yeah, well, they're childlike. They're dependent on the media. It's so scary that I've had this with my own family where certain members, they actually will dismiss things I say because they'll look at these people on TV as if they know them.
Yeah.
And they say, well, they didn't say nothing on TV about it.
We can trust them. And it's, they wouldn't
do that. Know them? You know, so I've said, do you know these people? I mean, Megyn Kelly is a very attractive woman. I don't know who she is.
Yeah.
Why should I trust anything she says? Right. She doesn't tell me things that are relative to what's really going on.
Yeah.
You know, you remember how many people actually were upset when we were supposed to go into Libya or Syria, and then all of a sudden we went in anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't even, they're not even aware that.
What's funny too is people
do it anyway.
People encounter every day how a conspiracy works. They go to work and they're told to do this and that and the other bullshit, even though they know it doesn't work when they do it that way. They know a much better way to do it, but they have to go along with the system because that's what they're told to do if they want to keep their job. What the hell do they think goes on in the media or in government or anything else? That they all operate that way. You take orders from above. If you don't, you're shown the door. But somehow they don't translate that over. What was the book
Into the Buzzsaw? That was one of the first books I read that said, wait a second here, there's something rotten in America.
Yeah, I read that years ago.
When you're talking about food industries that take meat and fish and they do whatever they can to make you buy it anyway. You know, even though it may be tainted with bacteria. And then when it's exposed, the industries flip out so much that, you know, you can't report on it. So, the media itself can't really tell us what's going on because the profit system that they depend on, they won't give them the revenues to continue.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happened with Air America. How can you talk about Walmart and what a scumbag company it is
if
you depend on them for advertising? You can't do it.
Yeah.
It's so sickening. It really is.
Yeah. But, you know, everything is geared toward profit. There's no emphasis anymore on quality, only how much money can be made. In fact, if you can fool the public into thinking there's quality when there isn't, well, that's fine because that's more profit. You know, the less quality you put in, the higher the price, the better. It never used to be this way. I remember as a kid. You did get quality, and that's why people bought the products. Oh, yeah, this is good stuff. Now, no, you can't even find good quality. You're forced to buy the crap.
That's why they tell people that if you have a refrigerator that, you know, like somebody I know has a refrigerator that's 30 years old, and the smartest thing to do is get it fixed.
Yeah.
Because it's made so well, why get something that's going to break down. I remember having a microwave for over 20 years, and it finally broke, and then I had one for five years, and it broke. But anyway, we're going backwards. We're just filling landfills with dangerous chemicals.
Yeah, here's a subtle way they're doing the same thing, playing the same game. A lot of handheld devices now, when you first buy them, they hold a charge for 2-3 days, right? Within 6 months, that son of a bitchin' thing won't hold a charge for more than 5 or 6 hours. You either have to buy a new unit or buy a new battery, but many times you can't find a battery that fits it anymore because they don't make that model. It's been discontinued. You got to buy a new one. That's by design. Yeah. They could make those batteries so that they hold a charge as long as they did when you first bought it 6 years later.
Yeah, but that's the biggest problem is we're poisoning ourselves.
Yeah.
Because everything winds up in a landfill. Everything winds up into the water table.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're wondering why our body, our bones are filled with cadmium, you know, and strontium right. and stuff like that.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, see, that's my one of the things that when they talk about politics, I always say, well, why aren't they talking about things like that? You know, why aren't they talking about freedom? You know, why aren't they talking about cutting the work week? You know, because it's happening anyway.
The only way they'll cut the work week is to save them money, not to, enable you to live more comfortably and enjoy more of your life.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's why I say that, and people like Jacques Fresco have mentioned that it doesn't matter, you know, whether, you know, they want to stay, they want to keep the system going. Their very motive is always to cut the cost of everything.
Yeah.
So that, you know, every time you lay off more people,
not yours.
Yeah, but what they're doing is they're destroying their own system. They're basically, you know, what good is it if the people who consume your product?
They don't care because they want to make as much as they can today, let it fall apart tomorrow. Who cares? We're not going to lose because we'll have all this money we just made. It used to be a company ran such a way that, you know, they could perpetuate the system. Keep it going. Keep this company going as long as we can. You know, we might not make as much money today as we did yesterday, but at least we're going to keep it going. We're turning over some kind of profit. No, that's not the philosophy anymore.
Yeah, and that's why there was one time when the president of the United Auto Workers talked to, I believe, somebody, the head of Ford Motors at the time, and said, well, the Ford Motors, the president said, look at these robots. And the president of, I believe, the UAW said, well, wait until you try to get your robots to buy your products. You know, it's a self-defeating system.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting rid of itself, whether anybody likes it or not. You know, so people could shout from the highest you know, mountains that capitalism is the best thing. But if you watch it, you know, you'll notice that it's destroying everything around us. I took a friend of mine on what I like to call a field trip, because people don't see anything. So I took him into some strip malls here in New Jersey, and I went to the first one, and there was not one store in the strip mall.
Yeah.
And it goes past the, you know, the road that leads to this is a major highway. It's a big, you know, people are constantly going down there. And I said to him, I says, 99% of the people that ride by this strip mall don't even know that it's like this while they're driving. They don't know. They don't see anything. They don't know. And the guy was like looking at me. And then I says, well, we're going to go to the next one. And we went to the next one over. And over there, there was four businesses left. And then one side, the entire strip mall was empty completely. And you know it's bad when you see the Chinese restaurants close. Because they seem to be the last thing that lasts.
Right.
And you know, I said, do they talk, so what's getting better? You know, it's so amazing they actually say things like a jobless recovery. And people don't even bat an eye when they say, oh, everything's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's so crazy, but there's so many people.
They're in denial, just like religious people. Everything's fine, thoughts and jobs.
Well, they don't see anything. You know?
You know,
all right. Yo, take it easy, Charlie. Keep up the good work.
All right, buddy. Thanks for your call. Great point.
Bye now.
Yep. Yeah. All right, guys. Short break. Be right back.
These are the top five reasons not to vaccinate. 1. Vaccines have never been proven safe or effective. Vaccine studies funded by pharmaceutical companies compare vaccine side effects from one vaccine to another. 2. Vaccines do not work. They may create a temporary increase in antibodies for a particular disease, but this does not equate to immunity to disease. 3. The very first vaccine was a disaster. Vaccine safety and effectiveness is a created myth, strongly embedded in the American psyche. 4. Vaccines are highly profitable for pharmaceutical companies and the healthcare industry. 5. Every study comparing unvaccinated to vaccinated children demonstrates that unvaccinated children enjoy far superior health.
On plant intelligence. I looked just before the show and I realized I don't even have that included in these notes. It was from another discussion I did years back. I didn't have time to look it up. I'm going to try to remember to add that to these notes later. But there was a, I can't remember the guy's name now. Retired FBI guy who either invented or he's the one who utilized the first guy in the FBI to utilize the lie detector technology. I don't know if he invented it or he's just the one that brought it to into the FBI to become a part of their normal routine interrogation tool, even though it's a fraud. It's kind of like presenting photographic evidence in the courtroom. It's useless. You can doctor photos so easy. Photos are useless today as proof of a crime, and so it is with the lie detector. It's a scam. It's so easy to fool the thing. It's not useful as a lie detector, quote unquote, but nevertheless it's useful to measure in normal circumstances when someone isn't aware how to trick the thing. It is useful to measure, generally speaking, to measure responses of the nervous system. Anyway, this guy, upon his retirement, FBI, started experimenting with plants. He used his lie detector on plants and started discovering some amazing things. For example, he found that when you attach electrodes to the leaves of a certain plant and light just one of the leaves on fire of that plant, the entire plant gives a response on the lie detector that a human gives when they're nervous. The meter starts, going off the charts. The little tracer thing there, it starts jumping, going wild. So he thought, wow, do plants feel pain? They seem to respond in a nervous way, like a person would, their nervous system, a person's nervous system gives the same readings a lie detector gives as a plant gives when they're subjected to pain. Anyway, so he started running off with that, trying other various experiments. He had um, a plant that, you know, that he raised from the time it was a sapling. And he had, you know, this woman be the caregiver part of his experiment. And so several months go by. Now the plant is growing, you know, to full size. He had her come in every day and water the plant, take care of it, even sing to it, talk to it, whatever, caress it, you know, whatever, so that the plant felt, quote, loved, if you will. And then one day he had a stranger come in. He noticed that plants seem to respond to other plants, you know, being subjected to fire, you know, lighting leaves on fire. Not only did the plant itself that had one of its leaves lit on fire respond, but a plant that grew up next to another plant, you could say they became friends, if you will, right? He noticed that the other plant that wasn't being subjected to, you know, one of its leaves being burned, still gave a nervous response, if you will, to the plant next to it being lit on fire. So he wondered, okay, let's try an experiment. He took this plant that this woman had raised, and it was very, you know, attentive to the plant, showed it affection, if you will. And, after several months, he had a different person come in, a male figure now, came in with another plant and lit that second plant on fire in the presence of this first plant. And then he took the plant, you know, snuffed the fire out by stamping on it. And then, then he left the room. This plant now went off the charts again, right? Because it witnessed this other plant being murdered, if you will. It showed, you know, the same kind of reading, as though the plant itself had been lit on fire when it wasn't. The next thing you know, he has the woman who raised that plant come into the room, and she starts talking to the plant, caressing it. Now the thing calmed down. Graph thing is normalized. It's not registering any response, any negative response. You know. Then he has her leave the room and has the guy that, you know, killed the other plant enter the room. He doesn't have a plant. He doesn't do anything to this plant. He just enters the room and comes near the plant. All of a sudden, the thing registers off the charts again. This plant is, quote, getting nervous, stressed because of the presence of this guy who just, can you imagine? He didn't do anything to the plant, didn't even touch it, just came near it. The plant sensed, knew that this was the guy, according to the readings that this retired FBI got from his lie detector machine. Frickin' mind-blowing. He left the room again. The woman came back. The plant, quote, calmed down and was not giving a reading anymore. This is astonishing. There have been actual mainstream articles written on stuff like that. Just a few years ago, I remember, it was an article about a woman up in Canada, scientist up in some university in Canada, I forget now, Calgary, I think it was, or something. But anyway, she became world famous in the botany community. Other scientists were so fascinated with her article that she wrote in some mainstream journal that they decided to try to duplicate her experiments. And sure enough, she initially performed her experiment with carrots. I forget what the hell it was. Anyway, other scientists did it with other plants, and they were achieving the same results. She noticed that this one plant she worked with, she thought, I wonder if I can notice a difference between growing seeds together in the same pot that come from the same parent plant and growing seeds together in the same pot that come from different parent plants. Do the plants act differently when they're growing together with siblings, if you will, from plants that grow together in the same pot with seedlings, saplings that are from different parents. And sure enough, she did. Now, she didn't want to get excited too quickly, so she used different control groups and you know, different parent plants and to make sure to keep repeating the experiment long before she ever published her findings. She wanted to make sure that it just wasn't some freak thing. But, the more and more and more she experimented, she began to realize, holy crap, I have to publish this. This is an amazing find. And sure enough, other scientists have confirmed it. No scientist has been able to prove it wrong. Plants that grow together that were raised from seeds that came from the same parent plant don't compete with each other. Their roots grow straight down. But plants grown together in the same pot that come from different, whose seeds come from different parent plants do compete. Their roots grow outward horizontally and entangle with each other. They compete for territory, if you will. But when they're grown with sibling seeds, if you will, the roots grow straight down. They don't grow outward. They don't compete with each other for territory. This has been shown again and again and again around the world. Apparently, no matter what plant they're using, what seeds they're using, this pattern repeats itself. Very interesting. Anyway, back to our notes here. Do plants know where they are? Well, we kind of already touched on this a little bit, but let's go into some more detail. Shoots grow up and roots grow down. That's just a given in botany. Everyone knows this. But how do plants know it? Some think the sun directs the plants, but this is not the case. When a seed buried underground is germinating, they're not using the sun to know which way is up, to know which direction to send some of its shoots upward and some downward. Are they, do they also perceive gravity, the center of gravity? Does that direct them to know which shoots to send up toward the surface and which shoots to send downward? Did you know that a plant can turn shoots, if you will, into roots and vice versa? It can adapt itself. Let me give you an example. Do you ever see a tree growing next to, a lake or something, or a pond? Sometimes branches will bend downward into the water. They're reaching for water. If the tree feels it's not getting enough from its roots, and it's near water, it'll bend one of its branches down and actually suck water up from a branch, and now that branch becomes a root. Anyway, plants also know when they're upside down, ladies and gentlemen, as it turns out. If a plant is turned upside down, it will immediately begin to reorient itself so that its roots bend over toward the ground and its shoots bend upward toward the sky. Trees have been known to turn branches into roots, yes, but if, they're already adapted and can easily reorient itself so that what has already been shoots can continue to remain shoots simply by bending in the other direction, if turned upside down. And roots can now become shoots because they've already been adapted as roots. a plant will do that. It's easier, apparently, to just reorient the direction that those shoots and roots are going than to change completely from a shoot to a root. You know what I'm saying? If a vine plant is unwound, as I said, I think I mentioned this yesterday, is unwound from a pole. And if the pole is moved, say, 10 feet away, the vine will automatically start reaching toward the new location of the pole. The plant has an awareness of its surroundings. Even though they don't have eyes, they can't see, somehow they know where the pole is. You can keep doing that till the top, the cows come home. Keep moving it. Unwind it. Move it again. Unwind it. Move it again. That vine, no matter where you place it, as long as it's not a mile away, place it somewhere within, 10, 15, 20 feet. That vine will forever keep relocating that friggin' pole. Find it and wind itself up that pole again and again and again. That absolutely demands an acceptance of the fact that plants sense their surroundings. They perceive their surroundings. So we shouldn't be surprised when we hear of experiments like what I mentioned a moment ago, where a plant not only knows that another plant is next to it, but they know when that plant is subjected to stress. Talked yesterday about plants that send pheromone or hormone, whatever. Send signals out by producing chemicals that produce scents. Let's put it that way. You don't call them pheromones, what animals give off. But you know what I'm saying. They give off scents. And other plants nearby pick up that scent and produce that same scent to drive away, beetles or giraffes that are eating their leaves and could potentially kill the plant as a self-defense mechanism. Not only will the plant that's being attacked produce these scents to drive off predators, but they send signals to the other plants to do the same thing. There's a lot more going on beneath the surface here than what most people realize. We just take things for granted. Most people would never even stop to take notice of things like this, would never even suspect anything like this is going on. This requires meticulous, repetitive, examination, research, note-taking, patience. But boy, does it pay off. Like I said, how many other things are going on in the plant kingdom that no one has even thought about yet to take notice of? You don't notice things like this unless you know what to look for. It's kind of like reading the Bible. If you don't know this problem's there, you're not going to see them. You're not going to notice them. It takes a while. Nobody has the time or even cares to do that. They figure, I don't need to because my minister is doing that for me. Religion is a hands-free pursuit, like fast food. I don't have to do anything. Just drive up to the drive-through window, place my order, and it's ready for me. Doesn't matter that it's a bunch of horse shit that's going to kill me. It's all done for me. People love that convenience. Don't have to put any work into it. So it is with religion. I don't need to put any work into it. My minister's always already done it for me. I just need to show up at church, swallow whatever guff he wants to shove down my throat. I not only don't have to do any research, why, I really don't want to, because I might find some things I don't like that will upset the preconceived notion that I've had programmed in my head. That's so much easier to just accept that. It sounds so much more tidy. Oh, how rewarding it is when you do undertake that effort, which should be something you'd want to pursue. It's pleasurable. It's very rewarding. It's fascinating. No, people want the quick fix, and boy, they pay a big price for that quick fix, don't they? Whether it's junk food, whether it's religion, whether it's politics, Your blissful ignorance, your laziness will screw you every time. What's sad is even when it's pointed out to you that you're getting screwed because of your apathy, you're in denial of it. You explain it away. You don't want to hear it. The people who try to tell you are crazy, paranoid. No, they're doing that cursed thing that you don't like to do. It's called thinking, as George Carlin used to say. I do this crazy thing called thinking. You're not supposed to think. The thinking's already done for you. Your job is just to be that of a sponge. Just absorb. That's all. Whatever you're told. Don't absorb anything outside the paradigm. No, just in the confines of this toilet bowl. Just absorb what's in the toilet bowl. That's your duty. Your duty is to clean up their duty. Just absorb it. Ah, Christ. How people can go through life like that, and they do. Oh, do they ever? Most people do. Scientists have found that at least some plants orient themselves according to gravity and or simulated gravity of centrifugal force. But this only explains what force plants use as a basis to determine which way is up and which way is down, or seemingly up or down when centrifugal force is being used. Yet, it still doesn't explain how a plant determines the difference. It's not enough to say, oh yes, we determined that gravity is how a plant is able to know which way is up and down. But that doesn't tell us how the plant knows the difference between up and down. Okay, it's using gravity. Fine. You can do experiments to show that, yeah, this particular plant uses gravity to know whether it's upside down or right side up. Okay, but how does it know that, you know, the force pulling on it tells the plant that, okay, that direction is down. How does it, quote, know? That's the question. Of course, you could also ask, how do we know? Don't say, oh, we know because of gravity that, you know, which direction is down. No. Going much deeper than that. How do we know? How do we know anything? How do we know what we know? How do we think? Isn't it amazing? I pointed this out before. But isn't it amazing the things we take for granted? You ever stop to ponder how amazing it is that the mind can think, can reason, can consciously perceive its surroundings? Well, you know, that's a very rare thing nowadays. Most people don't do that anymore. But, you know, the fact that the potential is there anyway, to actually just think, contemplate your surroundings and marvel at them. How do we do that? You know, scientists don't even know how to define consciousness. Get 10 dictionaries out and you're going to get 10 definitions of it. It's not something so easily defined. What actually is consciousness? Plants, ladies and gentlemen, have consciousness. They're ways of perceiving their surroundings and responding thereto are no different than ours. So much so are they similar to ours that you have to wonder, is there some type of, brain involved? No, they don't have brains like we do, but is there some type of thinking going on? It almost seems like there has to be. Their responses are so often very complex. They're not simple. We think plants are simple because, well, they don't have brains like we do. They don't have a central nervous system. But they have other things going on that seem to serve the same function in a different way, but when it comes out in the wash, they're still responding to their environment. They still engage in self-defense mechanisms. They eat, they drink, they take in sunlight, they bask in it. And don't forget, at the cellular level, plants are every bit as much complicated as we are. They have very similar genes like us. There's nothing simple about it. Like I said, the term simple cell, organisms is really laughable. There's nothing simple about any cell. The most, quote, simplest of cells are extremely complex. Did you ever look at a jellyfish? What the hell is that thing? Those clear ones. You ever see them on the beach? They're just a round blob of clear gelatinous material. When you look at it, it doesn't seem like there's anything to it. You're seeing straight through it, and yet there's nothing there. You don't see any equivalent of, you know, blood vessels or anything you could call a heart, lungs, or even gills for that matter. There's nothing there that you can tell. Of course, now, if you dye it and put it under the microscope, it's a different story. But, you know, as far as you can tell, just looking at it with the naked eye, there's nothing there. How does that thing live? How can it be alive? You're seeing right through it. It doesn't seem to have any internal organs, nothing. Has no eyes, nose, mouth. And yet the thing's alive. It seems so simple to look at, but it's not. Diet, put it under the microscope, and an incredibly complex world opens up. It's mind-blowing. We tend to want to simplify things. It makes it easier to comprehend, but no. Living organisms, if you ask me, are basically incomprehensible. They really are. There's so much we don't understand. We don't understand our own brains, which, again, something that absolutely blows my mind. Our own brains don't understand how our brains work. Hello? All right, guys, short break. Right back.
All my dreams pass before my eyes of curiosity. Dust in the wind, all they are is dust in the wind. Same old song, just a drop of water in an endless sea. All we do crumbles to the ground.
I think there's a resurgence of anti-Semitism because at this point in time, Europe has not yet learned how to be multicultural. And I think we're going to be part of the throes of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode, and Jews will be resented because of our leading role. But without that leading role and without that transformation, Europe will not survive.
What's your name?
Billy.
Oui. I like that name. Have you been a good little boy?
Yes. Yes.
How old are you, Billy?
I'm 26. I'm an entertainment lawyer in Beverly Hills.
Here's what I'm wearing, Billy. Wearing out the things that nobody.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
One thing that scientists have been able to definitively determine is that plants detect the force of gravity at the very tip of their roots, called the root caps. Cells in the central area of these root caps contain dense ball-like structures called statoliths, which are heavier than other parts of the cell, and thus they fall to the bottom, enabling the plant to, you know, to detect the direction of gravity, much like our semicircular canals. The fluid in those canals settles at the bottom, and so that's how we know that we're oriented. When we spin around in a circle, we get dizzy because that fluid is spinning. We lose our center of gravity, and we get dizzy and fall. You know, we can't keep our balance. So it is with plants. You turn them upside down, now those stratoliths settle to what was formerly the top of the plant. So now the plant knows it's upside down. It's disoriented. It gets dizzy, if you will. If you spin a plant around, you can bet, because of the movement of the stratoliths, the plant becomes the equivalent of dizzy. It must indeed, again, not the same way we get dizzy, but you could call it dizziness. Yes, it's disoriented. Not until it stops spinning can it now determine, okay, yeah, this way is up, that way's down, once the statoliths settle. Absolutely freaking fascinating. You know that birds have microscopic, birds that migrate, have microscopic iron filaments in a little sac. I think it's just above their beaks in their skulls. And those filaments act like a compass. They orient toward the north so the birds can tell which direction they're flying. We actually have a similar sac above our nasal cavity, which apparently, you know, isn't used anymore. We lost the ability to use that, but apparently our ancestors were able to tell direction the same way. Isn't that interesting? Microscopic iron filaments. What the hell? I should probably follow this show up with a repeat of a show I did a while back on anomalies with, you know, in the animal kingdom like this. Man, is it amazing. Look at, you know, electric eels. How the hell does a living organism produce an electric charge? Or how about the eye? You know, that blows my mind. The eye is designed in such a way that it is receptive to visible light, light from the sun. We don't see, you know, high frequency light waves or low frequency light waves on the electromagnetic spectrum. We only perceive a very narrow band, But it's the band that, you know, that comes from white light and all the different colors that make up white light. But in order to detect that light, the retina has, you know, it's like the retina understands, knows the wavelengths of visible light to be able to collect those wavelengths, translate that into a signal, and then send it to the back of the brain to turn that electrochemical signal that it translated the light beams into, that it received, into an image in the back of your head. And do understand that, that, you know, those two signals collected by each of your eyes are transferred independently by each optic nerve, which cross over each other on the way to the back of your head. Did you know that? Your two optic nerves actually crisscross each other. And then the brain has to invert it, because your lenses and your eyes invert the image upside down. It has to re-invert the image, put the two independent pieces together. And all the while, all it is an electrochemical signal. Light doesn't enter your head. It's projected onto the screen, if you will, of your retina. How in the hell does your retina, your optic nerve, and your brain all work collectively based on light rays that initially struck the retina? How the hell did this come about, guys? Anyway, we got a caller on the line. Welcome to the show, caller.
Hi, how you going? Charles Sean from Australia.
Oh, hey, Sean. How's it going, man?
Yeah, good, mate. Excellent produce going on here, if you will. I've got to give you a quick thing here when it comes to the octopus. The octopus at one stage, and I don't have a link for anybody.
They're very smart.
At hand. Sorry?
They're very smart, octopi.
They are very smart. I don't have a link offhand at the present time. They could probably find it themselves when it comes to YouTube. There is an octopi, a form of octopi that was actually placed in a doctor's waiting room. It was in a like an aquarium setup, and over the other side of the doctor's waiting room, there were fish. And the fish started going missing throughout the night, and the doctor was thinking, what the hell is going on here? There's no way possible that these fish could be going missing throughout the night unless somebody was breaking in. So, and who in their right mind, Charles, would break into a doctor's waiting room and just steal fish? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So the doctor put cameras in. This octopus was coming out the top of its own aquarium, crawling across the floor, over to the fish aquarium, eating the fish, and then going back to its own aquarium so that it wouldn't be detected.
Yeah. Is this the one where it used its suction cups to unscrew the lid? It was in like a big...
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
I read that. Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. There was another thing where there was an octopus that was getting annoyed by the light at night. It wanted to sleep, and during the night hours, or maybe even the day hours, I can't remember because I'm not well researched on octopi, on whether they sleep during the night or the day. But either way, what happens is when everybody was going away from the main aquarium area, the octopus wanted to sleep, so what it did was it crawled to the top of the aquarium and picked up rocks from the bottom and threw them at the light, literally, to get rid of the light so it could sleep at night or day. I can't remember. Obviously, it would be night, because if day, you wouldn't have lights. But I was just amazed at how amazing and intelligent these octopi were.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Absolutely they amazing.
Yeah, yeah. They rank up there with dolphins and chimpanzees. They're very intelligent.
They really are. Dolphins alone. I was walking through one of the Queensland parks, and a woman was walking alongside me, between me and a dolphin, and she said, "She likes you." I said, they can like humans, can they? And I was being a sarcastic arsehole. And she said, I said, they can like humans, can they? She said, they don't just like, they have crushes. She said, it seems like she has a crush on you. I said, are you joking? She said, no. These dolphins actually can communicate, for what we understand, to certain parts of space with sonar. And that's when I started looking into dolphins further and animals further. That was my first sort of leap into understanding that animals are so bloody intelligent, it's not funny. To this day, Charles, I still regret eating them, even though I eat meat once in a while.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, great show, mate. Great show. And thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, buddy. Great stuff.
Bye.
Oh, I tell you, folks, you could do a million shows on this topic and still not cover the bases. This is an endless stream to pursue here. There's so much information out on stuff like this. I've read several books, and there's more coming out all the time. One was called When an Elephant Weeps. That's a really good book. I can't think of some of the other ones. I've read quite a few over the years. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. Elephants do weep, by the way. They express sorrow, tears and everything when another elephant dies. When the herd is traveling and one of their party passes away, the whole herd will stop and they'll gather around the body of their fallen herd member, and they won't move for weeks on end. They have a mourning period. They literally shed tears. They'll stamp their feet. They could be heard for miles. They'll roar and stamp their feet as a sign of mourning. And apparently doing that is a way of communication, too, because elephants nearby will come and mourn with them. It's like they're letting them know someone has fallen, one of our own, you know, and so they'll come and mourn with them. Absolutely incredible. And yet, there's the goddamn poachers killing them for their frickin' tusks. You son of a bitch. You know, it's like the hunters that go after the gorillas just for their leather skin on their hands. You know, you bastards. You sick son of a bitches. These are highly intelligent, sentient, emotional, beautiful creatures. And they kill them by the hordes every day. Saw a commercial recently, I forget now, they said that, you know, just 10, 20 years ago, there were like, I don't know, 2 or 3 million African elephants, and now the population is down to like 400,000 or something like that. From millions down to 400,000 in just 10 or 20 years, whatever, I forget. So goddamn disgusting. You know, I think I will go and vote this year. I'm going to put Ollie the Octopus on the ballot. I think we'd be much better off. What do you think? Anyway, so, you know, I was talking a moment ago about statoliths. Those are those little filaments there that enable a plant to determine its orientation, whether it's upside down, you know, the equivalent of semicircular canals for a plant. Okay, great. That's fascinating. Scientists figured out what mechanism is used for some plants, anyway, to determine whether they're right side up or upside down. Okay, but that only solves part of the problem. That's the mechanism that is used. Fascinating discovery. Let's make note of it. But that doesn't tell us how the plant utilizes the information from the statoliths to determine whether it's right side up or upside down. That's another whole story right there. That's a whole different ball game. It's like saying that, okay, yeah, the semicircular canals tell us the fluid, you know, tells us upside down, right side up. But how do we know from that information sent? How does the brain take that information and interpret it? You know, we can say, well, we have a brain. We can't actually go through all the details because we really don't know. The brain is extremely complex, but we can summarize that, yeah, we have brain cells, neurons that communicate back and forth with each other, a signal is sent from the semicircular canal. We can, in a simplified fashion, explain the process, but you can't do that with a plant. You can recognize that, yes, the statoliths, depending on their orientation, notifies the plant, whether it's upside down or right side up. But what signal? Where is it sent? Where is the center, the nerve center, if you will, of the plant that takes that signal and interprets it accordingly, so the plant now knows whether to bend its roots upward or downward, or its shoots upward or downward, depending on its orientation? A plant will do that. Turn it upside down, the roots will start growing upward, and the shoots downward, or vice versa, whatever. The roots will go, when the roots are you know, up facing up now because the plant's inverted, they'll start bending downward, and the shoots that are now downward will start bending upward. But how does the plant know to do that? Don't say it's the statolith. The statolith is only the mechanism to alert the plant. But how does the plant take the information from the statolith and send the signals to its roots and shoots? What kind of mechanism is involved there? You can't even in a simplified form say, oh, well, that's easier. The neurons receive the signals. What neurons? Plants don't have neurons. But obviously, some nerve center, if you will, is involved that receives these signals and directs the plant to act accordingly. In our bodies, our brain sends signals to our extremities, our fingers, and, you know, our appendages, and, you know, and that's how we move accordingly. But what kind of signals does a plant send, and from where are the signals sent that tell the roots now to move a different way in the shoots and so forth? Obviously, there is such a nerve center, if you will. They don't have a central nervous system, but they have some kind of equivalent thereof. What is this system that's at play? Where is the central system? It may, in fact, be different for every single type of plant. But obviously, every plant does have such a system, a brain, if you will, a nerve center, if you will, that receives these signals and then directs the plant to act accordingly. What is this system? How does it work? Just because we don't understand it doesn't mean it isn't there. It's easy to write stuff off that you don't understand, and that's what scientists do every bit as much as the average layperson. Thank heavens, not all scientists are that way. You know, this one book I read as the basis for these notes was an exception. But most scientists, they won't talk about, oh, that's heresy. They won't talk about plants having intelligence, but obviously they do. Not in the same sense we do, no. Just like animals don't think the same way we do, but they do think. They have brains. And in a simplified way, we can explain how they're able to think. They have neurons that fire back and forth and communicate with each other just like we do. Not the same way, but just because animals act differently doesn't mean there isn't intelligence going on. Obviously, there is. But there's even scientists who would deny that, you know, with animals when they have goddamn brains. There's some animals that have bigger brains than we do. Maybe they're smarter than we are. Look at the, you know, the squid that Sean was just talking about. Incredibly smart, kind of frighteningly smart. They know that, you know, their caretakers are going to get pissed off if they discover that they're eating the fish. So they're trying to outsmart the caretaker. They're not just, you know, intelligent enough to figure out how to get out of their container and get over to the aquarium and steal fish. That takes a great deal of intelligence too. But in doing that, they're trying to hide their tracks, resealing the cover to their container. So when the caretakers come in the next day, it looks like they never left. What happened to the fish? You know, that's an incredible degree. That's wittiness, craftiness. That's beyond just intelligence. That's, you know, that's almost savant level intelligence. Don't be so quick to think that you're superior to the animal kingdom, ladies and gentlemen. That's just pride kicking in. We want to think that we as humans are better. We're not better. We're different. Perhaps the octopus, who outsmarts his caretakers, think that he's the smarter one. Look at these idiots. I can fool them. And they did. They had to put cameras in to try to figure out what the hell was going on. They couldn't figure it out. They did outsmart their caretakers, didn't they? So who's the smarter one here? I think I mentioned this story before. Well, I did, actually, years ago on Oracle. I don't know if I've mentioned it since. But another example of this, that the trainers at the San Diego SeaWorld left the dolphins with the balls and hoops that they were playing a game with them, you know, well, during a training session. They went on lunch break and they left everything in the pool. They figured, oh, you know, we're not going to take the time to put everything away. You know, it's going to take too long. We're only going to come back in another half hour, hour, or whatever, after our lunch break and have to pull everything back out. We'll just leave it in there. It's easier. So they go on lunch break. They come back to discover the dolphins are fighting. So, you know, they split them up, and I think some of them had some injuries. And they split them up, and they're wondering, what the hell happened? Well, luckily, they left the cameras going. They went back later and discovered, to their shock and amazement, the dolphins initiated their own game. It wasn't even the game the trainers had taught them. They made up their own game. So, obviously, they had to communicate with each other to lay down the rules of the game. They played this game, and the losers got pissed off at the winning team, and so they attacked them. You got to be freaking kidding. Well, you know, that should tell you something about competitive sports and the psychology behind that. You know, often you see fights breaking out on the ice, don't you, in hockey games. And, you know, what are we teaching our kids, guys? But that's another story. But anyway, isn't that interesting, though? They're almost human, aren't they, the way they act? Unfortunately, as we teach them more and more human ways, unfortunately, they're picking up human aggressiveness. And, you know, how much are we ruining these creatures interacting with them like this? We want to train them to do things that we want them to do. Why don't we let them train us to do things they want to do? I'm sure it would be a better world, wouldn't it? And then you hear about, you know, the Navy training SEALs in combat, you know, to help to assist them in warfare. Oh, you disgusting bastards. Anytime, guys, there's discoveries like this, animal intelligence, that's the first thing they want to do. Hey, how can we use this to destroy life instead of saving life or benefiting not only mankind, but the animals themselves? Nope, let's exploit them, see how much money we can make off of them, how much destructive purposes we can put them to. So it is with technology. Almost all technology today comes about as a result of military application research. God damn it. How can you have a good world, a world run in a good way when you got that kind of bullshit going on? They only squeak out to us just a little here, a little there, that they can use to exploit us with, keep track of us with. But keeping the bulk of the research and the discoveries to themselves so they can have more control, more power over us. God damn it. What a bastard. Backwoods world. But yeah, I can relate to what Sean was saying. I do feel guilty. You know, I was a vegetarian for years, not just health reasons. It was from watching, you know, a lot of the videos of what goes on in slaughterhouses. It's goddamn disgusting, ladies and gentlemen. You've been thinking of becoming a vegetarian. Watch some of those videos. You won't want to eat meat again. I haven't seen them in a long time, so it's easy now for me to, you know, it's not fresh in my mind. It's easy to forget about it, and I've laxed and gotten back into eating meat again. One reason is, again, it's just, you know, it's so convenient. I don't cook. I don't see myself ever cooking. It's just too much goddamn time. It is. When I have free time, I want to, you know, research for more shows. I don't want to spend time on that crap. I hate cooking. I love eating, but I hate cooking. It's just, it's a pain in the ass. There's the prep work, the chopping, the cutting, you know, the cooking itself, the mess you make, the cleanup. Holy Christ. By the time you're done with the whole damn thing, the prep work, the eating, and the cleaning up, you're talking an hour and a half, 2 freaking hours for one meal? No. I don't have time. So I go out to eat. That's what I do. Oh, I'll buy, you know, simple stuff to heat up, you know, oatmeal or something. It doesn't take any time. Yeah. Most of the time, though, when I'm at home, if I'm not going out to eat, I'll just eat a goddamn bowl of cereal or something. Real cereal, not that frickin' high fructose corn syrup crap. But, you know, healthy dried fruit and whole grains, you know, whatever. There's actually some pretty good brand names out there, too. You can get them now in the mainstream grocery stores. You know, they have a health food section, Kashi and Nature's Path. They make some really, really good cereals. With the almond milk, of course, forget frickin' dairy anymore, guys. All the shit they put in that. BGH and all. Forget it. But anyway, I'm off on a tangent here. Why did I bring that up? Oh, yeah. You know, I prefer a vegetarian diet, guys. It is the ideal diet. I don't think mankind is ever really going to advance as long as we're murdering, mass slaughtering animals for food. It's not necessary. All the nutrients you need, you can get from vegetable sources. In fact, the nutrients that you get from eating animals came from vegetable sources in the first place. We only eat animals because we have developed a perverted taste for meat. But there's no need to eat it. You do not need meat to survive. The vegetarian and vegan community has proved that. You don't need it. In fact, they'll say, oh, you're going to have your protein. Oh, knock it off. Of course you need protein. It's vital. But you don't need a lot of protein. You don't. It's got a lot of, it's way overrated. If you're an athlete, you need more protein than other people do. But you can still get that from eating, you know, nuts and beans. You don't need meat. Very often, meat actually has high amount of protein. Anyway, you got to go break for it.
You don't have to read my mind to know what I have in mind. Honey, you ought to know. Now you move so fine. Let me lay it on the line. I want to know what you do.
We're being lied to. We're being exploited. We're being robbed. We're being poisoned. We're being led to the slaughter. The question is, what are we going to do about it? Sooner or later, we're going to have to rise up and free ourselves from this tyranny. Separate, we are weak, but together, we are stronger than you can imagine. Get to know your local community while you network with the world. The awakening has begun. We will not be stopped.
Hey guys, welcome back. Already in the final segment here. Plants grown on orbiting space shuttles where the effects of gravity, you know, are not felt, have been observed to send their roots and shoots firing out randomly in a seeming confused pattern. Because again, they don't have any center of gravity. They're disoriented. They can't get their bearings. Isn't that interesting? Proving once again that plants are aware of their surroundings. They're aware of their orientation. They're meant to sense gravity. They do sense gravity, and they're meant to respond accordingly. That's how they know what direction to send their shoots, their roots. When that factor is removed from the equation, plants are confused, they're disoriented, they don't know which way to grow. They grow, but in a confused fashion. Absolutely incredible. They're disoriented. Scientists have also identified the movement hormone that sends signals for plants' roots to bend downward and for its shoots to bend upward. It's called auxin, A-U-X-I-N. Again, this is the hormone, if you will. I guess they do call them hormones in plants, too. Plants produce hormones just like animals. Anyway, they singled it out. They isolated the exact hormone called auxin that plants use to determine. So again, we know now what type of mechanism they use for orientation, the equivalent of their semicircular canals, and we know the type of hormone that is produced by the plant to send the signal to the roots and to the shoots to tell them which direction to grow. But it still doesn't tell us how the plant does this, how it processes this information and, quote, knows how to send that signal. The sending of such signals and the interpretation thereof would almost seem to demand some sort of centralized mechanism to direct these signals to make sure the plant acts accordingly. This seems to demand some type of intelligence. What else can you call it? For lack of a better word. Perhaps it's just a matter of anthropomorphizing the situation to think along these lines, but the temptation seems almost irresistible. How else can you account for this but to say there's got to be some type of thought process going on? What lies behind all of this, and what set it all into motion? Some plants, such as, carrots. Yeah, okay. I didn't think that was in the notes. I guess it is. Yeah, this is what I mentioned before. Carrots and many other plants, too, have been found to grow straight down instead of expanding outward and competing. You know, when they come from the same parent plant, all the seeds, they recognize their siblings, ladies and gentlemen. They don't compete with their siblings, but they will compete with, stranger plants from other families that aren't related to them. They know the difference between their blood relatives, if you will, and those that aren't part of their family clan. Amazing. We already mentioned plant memory earlier, but there's more, to be said on the matter. Do plants really, quote, remember things? We ordinarily associate remembrance with neurons, as though this is a function unique to these types of cells. But plants exhibit a process quite similar. Even though they don't have neurons, they appear to have a memory, and thus they must store these memories, obviously in a different way than animals do that have brains and neurons, but nevertheless, they have memories. They store memories. For instance, when the tendrils of a pea plant are severed, they can be stimulated to curl as though they're getting ready, to wrap around a twig or to grow on them simply by rubbing their base. But it's been found that this only works when the lights are on. Rubbing their base in the dark will not cause them to curl. However, if they're rubbed in the dark and then exposed to the light a couple hours later, the tendrils will then curl. In other words, these tendrils, quote, remember that they were rubbed hours earlier. But how? How are such, quote, memories stored and retrieved without neurons? Doesn't all of this tell us, once again, that plants are much more than just a collection of leaves, stems, and roots? There's something else going on there that we just don't understand. But because we don't understand it, doesn't mean we sweep it under the rug and still say, no, they're simple. There's nothing going on. They don't have central nervous systems. They don't have brains. There's nothing intelligent there. There's no comprehension of their environment. There is. Of course there is. Don't forget, I mentioned yesterday, the frickin' weeping willows guys can detect water inside of PVC pipes. It's not like, you could explain that away with metal pipes because they sweat. And you could say, oh, they're attracted to the moisture. No, you don't get that with PVC piping. There's no moisture to be attracted to. Somehow, weeping willow roots are able to detect the presence of water inside. I was telling this to a friend the other day, and he says, oh, maybe the tree is hearing, the water running. Well, okay, but that still doesn't explain how it knows that that's water. If it's, quote, sensing the vibration of the running water, it still takes intelligence to wrap your roots around that pipe and squeeze. You've got to know that squeezing is going to produce a crack that will enable you to, break into the pipe and extract the water inside. That still takes some type of a knowledge, to process that information and then act accordingly. They wrap around PVC pipes and squeeze to get the water out. That demands, a very profound awareness of your environment, because it's something that you can't, quote, see. It's something you can only hear. And yet, how does a plant know that this noise is actually that of running water? Do you understand the complexity of the, quote, thought process, if you can call it that, for lack of a better term? Do you understand the complexity that's involved here to produce this type of response to surrounding stimuli? I mean, this is, wow. We've been denying this in animals that have neurons, and yet here's plants that don't have neurons, and yet they're acting as though they do. Obviously, guys, as prideful as modern scientists can be, is really a hell of a lot. They just don't understand. I don't even know if some of this stuff ever will be understood. That's no reason to not continue to pursue a knowledge of this, sure. The more you study, the more you're going to learn. But are we ever going to, you know, fully grasp this stuff? It's so complex. Knowledge is infinite, guys. So I don't think we're ever going to fully grasp any particular subject. Keep pursuing it, though. As you learn more, you know, life gets better. But there's always going to be mystery, and that's what makes everything so interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't want to know everything. I want to know more. I think it'd be boring if you knew everything. Is the mind even capable of knowing everything? Our mind is capable of storing a lot of information. It's amazing. But is that storage infinite? I don't think so. The brain itself isn't infinite. Anyway, but amazing stuff, guys. What seems simple on the surface, like I said, you start looking closer and closer. Look at the jellyfish, good example. It looks so simple, right? It's just a blob, a clear, see-through blob. There's a lot going on there, though. Put some dye into that thing and look at it under the microscope. Now you realize, ooh, it is pretty complicated. Why, look at that. Anyway, that completes that discussion. We've got another 15 minutes left here. Any number of directions I wanted to go here. I was going to do the animal thing to follow this up with, but I don't have it out of the mothballs. It would take a couple minutes for me to go through my list and find. I don't even remember the name of that show now. I don't want to do that when I'm on air. I should have had that done ahead of time. I wasn't thinking about it earlier before the show started. But sometime I'll return to this topic. I'll talk about some amazing anomalies in the animal kingdom, which I've done before on Oracle. I've actually added to those notes over the years, so there's more stuff that I'll cover when I repeat that show. But, you know, absolutely fascinating. This stuff is amazing. I had some listeners send me some links over the past couple of days of the few emails I've been able to check. I have, you know, still haven't got to a lot of them. I'll get to them later. But one email was this family in Russia that found a baby, a cub, you know, a baby bear, and raised it from the time it was really young, only, I don't know, a few weeks old, I guess, or a couple months or whatever. And to the point now where, you know, it's full grown, but it's every bit as docile as it was when it was a cub. Bear is completely harmless. You know, they play with the bear, they sleep with the bear, they watch TV with the bear. That's one of his favorite activities. He waters the flowers out in the garden. They give him a pitcher, you know, and he a water pot, you know, and he goes out and he waters the. there's one little mini clip of them playing catch. The guy and his wife and the bear, a three-way catch game. You know, the ball keeps circulating around between the three of them. The bear catches it from the wife, tosses it to the husband. He tosses it to the wife. She tosses it back to the bear. You know, over and over and over. The bear loves to play catch. God, You know, I had a cat that used to do that. God, I miss that cat. It was great. My two favorite cats. One was all white with four double paws. His name was Snowball. Great cat. That cat, I really connected with him. He was really smart. He used to carry this string around everywhere he went, and he would bug me to play with him. He used to have me, you know, he loved when I would have him. He knew the string wasn't alive. Some people think that all cats are so stupid, they'll chase their tails. They're just entertaining themselves. They know it's their goddamn tail. They're not stupid. And when you have them chase a string, they know it's not alive, goddammit. They just love to play. It's like a cat and mouse game, a game of chase. You know, it's, they're having fun. It's their sport to them. It's like when we play catch. Do we think the ball is alive when we chase it across the field? No. It's a game. We know that. And so do cats. And dogs, too, for that matter. They know it's not a goddamn living thing. This cat knew that that piece of string was dead. And that the only way to, quote, bring it to life was to bring it to me so that I could have him chase it. He loved the chase game. So, you know, I'd drag it across the floor. I'd pick it up over his head, make him jump for it. And very often, he'd rip it out of my hand. He must have loved it. Aha, I gotcha. Sometimes I would go out of my way to make it really difficult for him. But you know what? He'd always get wise to me. I'd try to trick him. And, you know, he always wound up getting that damn string. He loved it. He wanted to see if, you know, he could outsmart me. Here I am thinking I'm outsmarting him. But he's thinking the other way around. No, you're not fooling me. Anyway, but, you know, he would, if he lost the string, sometimes he couldn't find it, he'd go up on my mother's bureau and grab one of her necklaces. You could hear him coming down the stairs, tick, 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 all the way down the stairs. You knew that he found a necklace. Sure enough, he'd bring it right up to you and just look at you, you know, with that look in his face, like, come on, let's play. One time I was hungover. I crashed on the living room rug, fell asleep watching TV. The next morning, I hear, I can feel him breathing on my face, and he's tapping me with his paw lightly. I open my eyes slightly. I'm, you know, really hungover. And I see the chain or the string, you know, hanging out of his mouth. I'm like, oh, no, not now. Come on, Snowball, you know. So he waited patiently, and when he saw I wasn't moving, he would tap me again. He wasn't going to give up. He wasn't taking no for an answer. Finally, by the third or fourth time, all right. And, you know, I didn't have to play long, just a few minutes, you know. He'd burn off some energy. He'd be happy, and then he'd go get something to eat or whatever. But he wouldn't stop. He would just tap me on the face, you know, lightly. Come on, come on. I'd open my eyes, and he'd be tilting his head this way and that, like, come on, aren't you going to play? Amazing, guys, the communication that goes on without words. Anyway, this other cat I had. That was really cool. His name was Snowball. I mean, that cat was Snowball. This other one was called Cupcake, black and white cat. He looked like a ring ding, you know, black on the outside, white in the middle. Anyway, Cupcake was really cool. One of the games we used to play was rolling a grape back and forth to each other, you know, on the kitchen floor. I don't know how it got started, but anytime I would get grapes, get all excited, he'd come running over. He wanted to play the grape game. He would lie down, and I would swat the grape toward him, and then he would take his paw and whack it back, aiming at me. He wouldn't just randomly hit it. He would aim it so it would come right back to me. We would do that for, you know, 5-10 minutes. He loved it. Then sometimes he'd get up on all fours and really get into it. If I would do it fast, he loved it. You know, I could hit it away from him, and he'd run over and still catch it and then whack it back to me. Unbelievable. Freaking unbelievable. You talk about bonding, connecting. You got to remind yourself sometimes, hey, wait a minute. This is an animal I'm playing with here. This isn't a person. You almost feel like it's a person you play. There's intelligence involved. There's, you know, it's a pleasure. It's like getting together with a friend and playing catch, you know. Amazing. Amazing. But anyway. I'm rambling here, but I guess I'm trying to fill some time, too, because I hate starting a topic, especially now it's a Friday, and only getting into a couple minutes of it and then having to start, you know, pick up there with a cliffhanger on Monday. Some of the topics I'm looking at here I'm going to be covering in the coming days. Since I'm on this science rant here, talking about, you know, amazing things in the natural world, I figured I would continue this for a few more shows anyway. Actually, I have four more sets of notes dealing with scientific topics. So this might take us into Wednesday or Thursday next week. And then after that, I'll get back to business as usual, exposing the crimes and corruptions of this tribal-run system of ours. But, you know, this stuff is fascinating. Every once in a while, I like to come back to talking about stuff like this. Like I said, I prefer to talk about this stuff. I wish all these years, all the reading I've done about disgusting politics, I wish we didn't live in such a frigged up world. If all that time was spent studying the wonders of science, you know, how much more I would have learned and how many more fascinating things I would have uncovered. I would prefer reading about this stuff. But some of the things I'm going to be talking about next week is what's called the grid, or the Earth grid. I covered this years back on Oracle, but you know, I wanted to repeat that. Actually, I don't think it was Oracle. I think it was another obscure network that most people didn't even know I was on, so most people never even heard that talk. But it's fascinating. It deals with... I mentioned before how in ancient times the Earth's magnetic field is much more powerful than what it is today. It's losing so many gauss every century. In fact, it's predicted that in the next two or three centuries, some say even in the next century, it will have lost so much power that life on Earth will become not only difficult, but eventually impossible, because it's the magnetic field that protects us from, you know, solar and extrasolar radiation, right? The Van Allen belts. When the Earth's magnetic field becomes so weakened that it can't protect us anymore from that radiation, we're done. Our ass is grass. So, if man doesn't kill his own self, well, you know, that'll kill us eventually. But anyway, in ancient times, the Earth's magnetic field was much stronger. It was much more easily protected, and it was a lot more energy. You had more powerful, you know, lightning blasts, not only from the Earth's local environment, but also from outside the Earth. You know, I talked about plasma cosmology before, and how in ancient times there were interplanetary blasts of powerful lightning, if you can call it that, thunderbolts of the gods, if you will. The ancients described having witnessed these things, not ordinary lightning from a, you know, a thunderstorm. No. Powerful blasts originating from, you know, say the moon or from Mars when the Earth passed close by in its orbit, you know. The ancients talked about Venus having a tail. Most scientists today, you know, write that off. Oh, that's ridiculous. No, it isn't. In ancient times, when Venus had a much more powerful magnetic field than it does today, its magnetotail would have glowed. It would have been much more charged with energy than what it is today. And so we know today from, you know, magnetometers and other high-tech instrumentation, we can measure Venus's magnetotail, and that forms from the sun's solar wind, you know, the stream of particles that pushes outward, and when it strikes the magnetic fields of the different planets, it distorts them so that they become flattened on one side where the solar wind strikes them, and then elongated on the far side. It stretches them out, so much so that a literal tail is created. You can't see that tail today because all the magnetic fields of the various planets in the solar system have degraded over time. They've lost a lot of their energy. But in ancient times, when those magnetic fields were much stronger and contained more energy, they glowed just like the tail of a comet. That's all the tail of a comet is, ladies and gentlemen. It's not streaming particles of melted ice blown off the surface. Comets are not ice, ladies and gentlemen. Comets are rocky bodies. Anyway, they're plasma tails, streams of glowing ionized particles streaming off of the sun that interact and produce an electric charge when they, you know, interact with the approaching body called the comet. There's no difference between a comet and an asteroid, guys, except that comets approach closer to the sun and interact, you know, with the sun's, you know, with the solar wind. That's all it is. So you're seeing a visible tail of streaming particles that originated from the sun, not from the nucleus of the comet. And so it was with Venus, much more so, you know, because now you're dealing with an actual magnetic field directing these particles. Earth had one, so that when Earth passed between the sun and Mars, Mars got struck on occasion with a powerful interplanetary bolt of lightning, if you will. It's kind of like when you touch a doorknob. There's an imbalance in the amount of electrons in your hand and the doorknob. So when you touch the doorknob, an electrical exchange takes place to balance out the imbalance of electrons. That's what was going on with these interplanetary blasts of lightning. You know, it was a balancing out of the imbalance of electrons. Anyway. That's one of the things we're going to talk about next week, this world grid system. The ancients built a lot of ancient stone structures on a grid pattern, which reflected the pattern of the Earth's magnetic field. That's one of the things. We'll look at some other fascinating stuff. All right, guys, have a great weekend. I'll see you Monday. Take care.
Some Renegade replacements.
Replace body lotion with coconut oil. Replace cleaning supplies with vinegar and baking soda. Replace perfume and cologne with essential oils. Replace laundry detergent with borax, washing soda, and Castile soap. Replace packaged food with local produce. Replace pharmaceuticals with herbs. Replace mass media with Renegade Broadcasting and Renegade Tribune. Replace your Zionist-occupied government with nationalists.
Enjoy.